Okay. Right, since we come in on a laugh all the time, we're coming on Spill's rather terrible joke, which was way worse than what Brett told last week. Yeah, that's it. This is now a competition for the worst joke before the podcast begins. We are back once again. It's been less than a week. When did we record the other one?
Thursday week.
Thursday week, so okay.
It's been over a week.
It's been over a week since we recorded, but it came out last Wednesday, Thursday. Right. So it's probably been about 4 or 5 days, so... Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the last podcast. Just like last time, oh, by the way, my name's Ashley Hall. Just like last time, I am joined.
Spills.
Brett.
I didn't even need to say their names this time. Do you want to have
Spillopolis?
He's Greek.
Yeah.
That's right.
So just call me Spills.
Have you got a better introduction for yourself this time? Last time we asked you for one, you kind of just choked on the spot. We'll put it on the spot again.
I guess, Ash, what do you want to know? You know, there's so much about me.
Just you in general.
Me in general. I don't know. I've got a huge passion. Paranormal's massive passion. And music. Huge passion for music.
Techno.
Producing. Techno. Electronic music.
Electronic music.
Doof doof. Love
doof
it.
Doof.
It's great.
We might hear a lot of doof doof on the podcast. We'll probably produce a lot of music. And we just tag them in at the end of the podcast. So you can listen to what Spill's been making.
We could do
that. I've also just learned that the other guy sitting across from me also makes music, but hasn't done so in a long time. Brett, what's going on there?
Why haven't I been playing music?
Why didn't I even... Well, I guess I didn't know because you never told me, but...
I don't even know myself. Time. Yeah, I started playing... I think it was saxophone many, many years ago, then transferred over to guitar. Spent a number of years playing. I played a few shows around town as well, which was...
You've actually played in shows as well, so you both have played in shows.
But you know what? The best compliment I've ever had was during a live show. Oh, at the end of one, this guy yelled out, the best thing, it could be nothing better. He said, "That would have been great if you had tits."
That's just you in general, though.
You're saying that I'd be great if I had tits.
You should ask what happened with the flute at band camp.
That's still a sore topic.
Yeah, okay. Did you know I've never heard any of Brett's music? I've known Brett for how long, Brett? 7 years? 8 years?
Really?
8 years.
Fuck, Brett.
Yeah.
I didn't... Yeah, I had no idea.
2008, I reckon.
Yeah, it happened.
2009, maybe. 2009.
Shit, when's the anniversary, guys?
I know.
maybe he can serenade you. We can write each other a piece.
Maybe we can review our vows on the podcast.
All right. So
I don't know, guys. Yeah, this isn't the direction I thought this show was going to go in.
Your money was money for you to do whatever was asked of you.
Yeah.
And we don't want the community service people to see a bad record next to your name.
Exactly.
But so you guys have heard your own music, but have you heard your voices before? So last week was the first time you guys had been part of a podcast. Is that true?
Correct.
You've never? Did you guys have a listen back?
Not at all.
No.
Oh, shit. thank God this isn't an episode dedicated to talking about the last podcast. So you guys didn't even listen to it. Well, how'd you find just the process? Was it?
It was a great time, and that's the beautiful thing, being able to sit down and have good, fun discussion without some of the formal scheduling or structure that other programs have. I just think the way we're doing this, you know, it's good fun for us, and I'm guessing that's going to be good fun for the listeners as well.
Yep.
Look, I guess for me, Ash, it was, because it's unscripted, it's easy just to talk shit, let it flow, and... We're all good at doing that, so...
You can't script gold like this.
No, you can't.
No, gold is never scripted. And lots of people agreed. We got a lot of interesting feedback. Now, this isn't going to be a regular part of the show, giving feedback. But just because it was the first show, I just thought, I'll bring the guys in on what everyone thought of our inaugural podcast. So, Deb Miller thought it was great stuff, and she loved it.
Correct.
Susan also loved it.
Another correct. We've got some smart listeners.
Our good friend Pete, or as you call her,
PP.
PP. She just simply wrote, oh, or something. I don't know, OWWWWW. One of the interesting comments we got, though, was, is that Dave, our telephone dude? Now, that was from Nikki. Now, either of you guys work for the telephone companies?
No.
No, Nikki. Guess what, Nikki? It is not Dave, your telephone dude. Sorry.
Could be.
Spills could be.
But I'm not.
And Vipomo wrote, it was kind of a warts and all podcast, and he really enjoyed it. Or she really enjoyed it.
Where it's genital warts and all.
Exactly.
Did you just steal his line?
He did steal my fucking line.
All right. Well, so I thought I'd get in there early because I knew he was going to throw that one at me, so...
Actually, I probably would have thrown it at Ash.
Oh,
but...
okay.
Bit of nothing wrong with a bit of friendly competition on the show. But yeah, so it was all good. We were actually hoping for some negative feedback because, as I said, good feedback's great. It's great to know you guys are enjoying it, but there's not a lot we can say. Where if there's negative feedback, we can discuss something. So if there's anything at all, no matter how small your gripe, please write that in. Go to facebook.com/theparanormalguide and inbox it in there, and we'll read it out in the show and...
comment.
And comment. Respond. Now, in the last week, since we last together, have you guys done anything paranormal?
I haven't.
You haven't?
I've been in Melbourne.
You've been in Melbourne for
a week. On holidays.
On holidays. Yep. Always good to get away, Brett.
Not a single thing, unfortunately.
Not a sausage.
Can't really tell why. Just
what were you doing? What did you get up to today? Because I found this interesting. See, he could have done something paranormal today, potentially, but what did you do instead?
Actually, you could say it was paranormal related. It was to do with spirits.
It was.
Okay. if we want to be more accurate than that, yes, it was drinking by 11 a.m.
What were you drinking, Beth?
Margaritas.
Margaritas.
Down by the beach. So no way to do it.
And I was trying to get out to you, why were you doing this? And the only answer I seem to get is, because you could.
That's pretty much the reason. I really, I'm trying to bring back some memories of the Caribbean. So,
you're bringing the Caribbean to Adelaide, South Australia.
Exactly, and that's how I roll.
What beach were you at, bro?
Which one? Today?
Yeah.
Glenelg.
Okay. Anything like the Caribbean?
Nah. No, I wish it was, but... yeah.
Well,
you know what? The more I drank, the more it became like it.
Excellent. Drink to see but what you want.
But I should say that I am not an alcoholic.
You're just a social drinker, drinking by yourself down at the beach, weren't you?
That was almost an awkward pause then, wasn't it?
No. It's all good. Well, I myself have not really done it. Besides what you guys may have seen on the Facebook page, etc., I've not really done anything. I haven't been out anywhere. We've all kind of been quite slack paranormal-wise. Are you guys happy to answer some questions? So we did get some questions sent in specifically to be answered by us guys for the podcast, but also about 3 months ago when I originally announced the podcast was coming back, we also got sent a pile of questions then too. So I'll tackle some of them. Are you guys cool with this?
Depends on the questions.
No.
We just flat out yes.
Just a flat out yes. All right. Okay. So the first one comes from Linda from RNL Paranormal. So, have you met RNL Paranormal? I know Spills
has.
Have you met? No. So they're a South Australian paranormal investigation team, and I met them... God, where did I meet? I think I met them at Gladstone Jail originally. But basically, Linda asks, what is the most interesting or odd situation you have been in while investigating? Now, this, of course, does not have to be a paranormal event, just anything odd or interesting that's happened on investigation.
Okay. A couple. Probably the biggest one for me was at the Adelaide Jail. I reckon five years ago, maybe. And my good friend Alison Oborn. Yes, Alison, that was a plug.
From Adelaide Southern Horizons.
From Adelaide Southern Horizons. Anyway, hi Anna. And look, Alison was undertaking a tour. It was at the end of the tour in what they called the new building. And I used to sneak out for a cigarette. And while I was sneaking out for a cigarette, I saw, and this is going to sound really crazy, I saw what was almost like a black mass. I wouldn't say it was a figure. It wasn't, it's really hard to explain, but it was just a black mass. It was solid almost. It blocked out the window behind it, and it was pulsating, and it had a dark blue aura, is probably the best way of explaining it. And I was staring at it thinking, what the fuck is that? And it wasn't like a glimpse, it was gone. It was a good 3 to 5 seconds staring at it and saying, you know, what is that? And then it just imploded in on itself. And that's probably the most intense feeling I've had. And the second most intense feeling was Ash when we were at Gladstone.
Yeah.
in the old dining hall, we had a pretty intense experience there. Nothing solid. Oh, we did hear a disembodied voice once we had left the building.
But that was weird.
It was very, very intense. And the
voice we heard sounded really...
It was like a...
Yeah, it was like a groaning, breathy, roaring type it was thing, which really, you picked up on your voice record, but what does it sound like there?
Just sounds something like something mechanical.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was very... they're probably the most two significant, most intense experiences I've had.
Okay.
Just to ask you about your first experience with the black
mass,
considering your views being what they are on the paranormal, what do you make of what you experienced?
You know, again, Brett, you know, early on, I believed in it 100%. You could say there was a knock on the wall, that's a dead person. I would have gone, yep, that's a dead person.
Were you like that back then when you saw this?
Definitely. Yeah. You know, so again, what was it? You know, and I still question it to this day. I had another experience at the jail probably 6 months before that where I thought I'd saw someone looking at me through one of the windows there. And the lights were on as well. So the difference between that experience and this one was that was just a glimpse out of the corner of my eye. You know, I'm a logical person. I went over it and over it. So could I say it was something that I... Could I say it was definitely a person that I saw? No. But this other experience with the mass, definitely. But is it... You know, again, is it a spirit? Is it energy? Was it my eyes playing tricks on me?
Have you looked up infrasound?
Yeah, I know a little bit about infrasound.
I think some of the stories about infrasound have played out like that as well, with a black mass, with a distortion of vision, really. I don't know if that's going to be the same or, you know, who knows at the end of the day, but I think it's just worth always considering. There are all sorts of possible explanations for things. I'm not trying to just say that, no.
Yeah, you're counselling now, mate.
Yeah, just get your head screwed back on. Myself, I think one of the interesting things was actually at Gladstone after you'd had that experience.
We went back in when we split up.
Yeah, we had the Ouija board out.
Yes,
that's and right. Said that it wasn't human when we had some... supposedly had some responses, and it said that it was not human. Yeah. But what's funny is that's something I've noticed a number of times in other places as well, that a Ouija board will say that it's not human. And I don't know if that's unique to...
But again, is it human when it says it's not human?
That it was not human, that it was not...
Is that the so-called spirit interpreting that it's not human now? Maybe it's just a mass of energy, so it doesn't see itself as being in human form. The other option, or the other side to it is, Brett, have you ever heard of infrasound?
Well, you could actually say the ideometer effect, if you want to be technically correct. The ideometer effect. Now, that's obviously how the Ouija board will work regardless, but is it our subconscious that's controlling that? Well, you know what? It's going to be, but is something prodding that subconscious to force those results? That's what we don't know. So, you know, I think that's interesting as well. You know, again, what do those answers mean? Not really much more than what we had. The other experience was up at Old Talem Town, which I think is one of the... It has to be the best place I've ever been on paranormal investigations. There's another plug for Alison.
Yeah.
For Adelaide's Horn Horizons.
Spending some time in the church when it was pitch black, it was overcast outside, and I was sitting in there by myself. I had, I think, 4 K2 meters set up. Now, again, you know, we don't really put a lot of stock in K2 meters, but what I thought was interesting, after some provocation, the K2 meter furthest from me went off by itself. Then it stopped. Then the next one closer to me went off.
Yeah.
Then it stopped. And at a walking pace, it seemed that there was a slowly moving electromagnetic field coming towards me, right until the one in front of me went off. And then I didn't feel a cold spot. I felt a real hot spot, almost as though, you know, I would have interpreted that as being anger. That was a pretty intense experience, you know, to have a response, you know, on four separate meters, and then to have a physical feeling about that as well, and to be, you know, in a pitch black room by yourself, you know, that was interesting too. So that was really intense and probably the best experience I've had on a paranormal experience.
Myself, probably Tale of Town with LA Small Horizons. This was myself and Spills were here for this one. We were just outside of an old train station, one of the first buildings taken into this location to help make this this pioneer village. And we're at the front of this train station. It was middle of the night. I think we're out there looking at stars. So we're meant to be investigating this little station. We left two or three people in the station to keep monitoring that equipment. And what I would usually do if I was looking after a group, I would often just leave the building, just say, yeah, you guys are okay in there. I'll be out the street getting some air. But we were all outside, and I think we're looking up at the stars.
We were talking about something completely different.
That sounds romantic, guys.
Yeah, it does. It was probably taking photos possibly that night.
It was related to photography, I think.
And so there was three of us outside. Myself, was it Deb?
It was Deb
who sent in some of the feedback earlier. And we were there, and the first thing we noticed was all the birds just took, like, everything went quiet. Everything around us went absolute dead quiet, no birds, and all the birds everywhere around us took off at once. It was hundreds, thousands possibly, just took off out of the trees all at once. So there was this massive uproar of sound, and then that quietened down, and then what did we get? We're standing there in the pitch black, and then we could just hear.
It was almost like stomping footsteps running towards us. You could hear the leaves breaking.
Yeah.
And we're not talking at it. We're talking a good probably only 3-4 meters coming directly towards us. Oh, do you want me to continue with it, Ash?
I was okay. So and we could hear these individual footfalls like crash, crash, crash. I'm standing there, and I don't know what's going through other people's minds at the time. I don't know if they could hear it because it was so sudden. And I'm thinking in my head, shit, I've got to look after this group. What do I do? Do we see what's going to happen? See what's going to happen? Have an experience? Or do I do the thing, the safe thing, and turn a torch on? See, because I was convinced that was a person. That's how solid it sounded. I turned that torch on, bam, completely quiet, nothing.
And then Ash got abused by me for turning the
torch on. Yeah, what the hell were you thinking?
What happens? And it's always going to fucking bother me, and I should never think these things, but what if I never turn that torch on? What's going to happen?
Exactly right. Probably nothing.
What was going to happen?
Probably nothing.
That's strange, yeah. It's probably come up to scare us, because what happens up there seems to be a lot of intimidation from whatever it is, or potentially is. So yeah, it's probably just going to be intimidating again. My second strangest thing that's happened on investigation was in a place we just refer to as the facility in New South Wales. I don't know if it's okay to name this location yet, so I'm not going to, but it's just an old hospital. And I was there with another team, New South Wales, Australian Paranormal Phenomena Investigators, as well as some of the crew from Ghost of Oz, and we were just sitting there, and we were investigating this old building, this massive old hospital, really, really creepy place, no power, nothing, in the middle of absolute nowhere. And we decided to sit down in this long corridor in the middle, see if we could hear the sounds either side. And while we're sitting there, we're doing our EVP session, we're trying a bit of propagation work, we're doing all sorts of things. We did get strange things, people seeing strange shadows, there was people seeing where there was no people there, things like that. But the weirdest thing that happened was, after I had just finished, I wasn't provoking in a bad way, I was kind of more encouraging something to happen. After I just finished that, we heard this strange, it sounded like a stereotypical fucking ghost, woo woo woo, right? It sounded exactly like that, so it started from the right of us. Went straight through us, like we're sitting across from each other. There's about 10 of us in this hallway. Went straight down between us, and we heard it go off to my left. So whatever it was seemed to come straight through us. What is interesting, though, is some of them went home, they looked it up. Now, it could have been a kind of owl. There's a type of owl up there that does throw its voice, and it can be heard for fucking miles, kilometres, depending on whether you're metric or imperial. I don't understand how I'd hear it here and hear it pass in front and hear it there. It could be acoustics, of course.
There is another potential explanation. If we put some of these pieces together.
Infrasound?
No. this one's much more logical. Okay, facility, hospital, team, perhaps carers, Ash?
Carers.
Team of your carers, maybe. maybe it wasn't an owl, but it was actually an ambulance of some sort.
I did not wake up strapped into anything.
Are you certain? Are you
I'm not that crazy.
You know what? It's an explanation. Okay. It's either that or infrasound.
As investigators, we do have to look at every possible explanation, correct? This is going to plague me forever too. Not only will I be thinking about what would happen if I never turned my torch on, but was I going a little bit insane? What was that Shutter Island? You know, DiCaprio, you guys ever see that movie?
No, I think so.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Just going back to what you were saying, Ash, with that sound, I can remember being on an investigation. You were there as well, but we were in separate groups.
Manda.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Alison and I heard a very similar sort of sound that almost come from nowhere, from left to right, and we heard it pass by us. And it was almost like an echoey, very hard to explain. It was almost, probably the easiest way of explaining it is it was in and out of our dimension.
Yeah.
If that means anything, it was just really weird.
And about five minutes after that, it scared the absolute shit out of myself, Pete and Nick.
Oh, that's right. I was hiding in the dark, wasn't I?
So I've never screamed that loud.
Yeah, you have, with a fire extinguisher.
That was only a matter of time till that came up.
Well, we answered again the question, what was our strangest potentially paranormal experience? So I'm going to edit the question slightly, because I think there's a different answer possibly after. What's the strangest non-paranormal thing you've had happen on a investigation? Just something quirky that might have happened, or... Oh no, he's smiling at me. He's a sharp inhalation of air. Now he's leaning back and he's looking at me with a smile, I'm afraid.
There's one probably significant one that I can remember, but I won't bring that up.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
It involved a drunk.
A drunk?
A guest on a tour and...
Oh, well, that's up to you whether you bring that up or not. That's got nothing to do with me.
The other one would be probably the urban exploration incident. I guess, along with the paranormal side of things and the music, I have a passion for photography as well. And you were there as well. Oh, you were there as well, Brett. There we go. All three of us were there. So we were at a location taking photographs, and one of the abandoned buildings... I actually heard some noise coming from it, didn't I, Ash?
You did. Look, we're not going to say the name of the location, but for those listening might be familiar, it's a really old factory, really big old building, very industrial-looking place.
It is.
Northwest of Adelaide?
It's about that.
Yeah. Okay, so...
So, stumbled across a homeless woman.
Yeah.
And, it was a bit of a shock, to be honest. So I gave her a bit of food and a pillow and off we went on our merry way. So
I remember a bit weirdly because we were walking around this building and we had been in there previously and someone had said someone was living in this location, right. But we weren't expecting someone there.
No, we weren't.
And then we're walking up, you kind of went direct to this building, I kind of took this sideways route. And then I thought I heard you talking, I said something, you thought it was me.
Yeah.
Then you shone your torch in. And what did you say?
I found a lady crouching in the corner.
In this old decrepit building, all the walls kicked out.
Yeah.
Fuck. What did you think?
Look, at first, I didn't know what to think. I guess they were probably more scared than I was. But once we got talking, everything was fine. And,
yeah. And we all went back there to interview this we lady did, about what it was like to live in a place such as this, because it's not typical accommodation. And things started to get a bit hairy.
They did. Look, unfortunately, this lady we come across was a fairly heavy drug user.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though we were there a couple of days before and she became quite aggressive, and I guess once she realised who we were, there were no real issues. But the first five minutes or so, it was fairly touch and go.
This was pretty fucking... knife edge type shit. Well, I don't do in-house investigations, private investigations, mainly because of this that took place. So I was part of another team a long, long time ago, and we did do a personal investigation at someone's home. They were, their entire family were experiencing strange stuff, so we said, yep, we're going. We knew the person, so this person wasn't a complete stranger to us. We had met her several times. So it was her and her teenage daughter was in this house, and they were telling us about what was going on in the location. And so I've got this video camera, got the voice recorder, and basically getting it all down where it took place. So the other investigator I was with was in the lounge room with the mother, talking to her, and I was talking to the daughter, getting basically where her experience had taken place in the house. We basically interviewed them separately, so we had basically separate ideas of what was going on in the place. While this was happening, the father came home. The father didn't know there was any body meant to happen at this house. He didn't even know there was something strange happening in the house. The last thing he was expecting was to come home from work from a long, hard day to see two strange men in his house, one in one room talking to the wife, one in another room talking to the teenage daughter. So things pretty bloody hairy pretty quick, but we eventually got out there. She ended up talking the husband down to get him calmed down for us to get out there, but That was pretty interesting. Full on. So I don't do in-home investigation because you don't know what the hell is going to happen.
Actually, I have thought of the strangest thing I've seen. It was at an in-home investigation.
Yep.
I saw someone feed an almond to an emu.
What?
I remember that. What are you talking about?
Exactly that.
Can you fill us in? You can't just leave like someone feeding an almond to an emu. Doesn't sound so strange to me. We are in Australia, I guess. Well, what the hell? You've got to give us a little bit more on this.
Well, the emu was obviously hungry. There was an almond tree right there. And then, you know what? I mean, this guy, it could have been any Spilios at all. He had this great idea. I'm going to feed this fucking almond to this emu.
He loved it.
Do they eat almonds?
No, it can kill him.
This emu loved it. To the point where he wanted me to take another almond from the tree and feed it another almond.
The emu loved it from Spills?
It did. No, the almond.
Okay. That's pretty rad. So you're feeding an almond to an emu. Did it take it from you?
Of course it did. Loved it.
It was either there was that option, or he could have gone in and been potentially chased and attacked by the emu.
Did that happen to anyone?
You should have gone in.
No. Speaking of animals.
Gladstone. I'm thinking of something completely different. What are you thinking?
So remember when we were at Gladstone and we were on the tour and we're out the back. So you've got to picture this. There's a group of us. It's dark. We're on a tour. We're at the back of this old prison.
Yeah.
And in the paddock next to the prison, there's a heap of kangaroos. So we enter this area and the lady says to us, look, stay away from the kangaroos. A couple of them can be aggressive. So there was two tour guides, the lady that was undertaking the tour and then the backup. So I'm standing outside with the backup while the rest of the guys are inside having a look. And she looks at me and says, and I forget the lady's name of that was undertaking the tour. We'll call her, I don't know.
Rosie or something?
Something like that. Yeah. We say, can you go let Rosie know that Pretty Eyes is getting pretty fucked off?
What?
And I looked up and I see this kangaroo charging. This is no shit. I see this kangaroo charging this tour guide and it stops about 2 metres from her. And she just backs up and goes, yeah, okay, it's time to get the fuck out of here.
These looked like a big red, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Like, yeah, you know what kangaroos, yeah.
Yeah. Hell.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I just remembered another animal story.
The koalas?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. And how psychic Spills is.
I wouldn't say it's psychic, but it's weird.
Well, it's not psychic when I joke about it. We're driving up looking for this urban legend of this place called Allemonk's Castle up out in the hills just outside of Adelaide, and there's several locations where it could be. And we were looking for it, and just driving along in Spills' car, going through some of the... It wasn't one of the main roads, it was more of a back road.
It was at the back of Mount Lofty summit.
Yeah. And Spills just looks at me and goes, around this next corner is going to be an animal. I'm going to hit it if I don't slow down. So you've slowed down, you've taken the corner a little bit wider, and fucking sure enough, there, sitting about a metre onto the road, is this big-ass koala just sitting there.
Right in the middle of the
looking
road.
Looking away from the road, just kind of like looking out to the scrub. So I said to Spills, I'll pull over. We've got to shoo them off because someone else might not have this psychic bloody intuition Spills has to slow down. We'll shoo them off the road. And Spills is probably thinking this would be a great idea so he can get photos of me getting mauled or something.
It's pretty funny.
So you were watching in your reverse camera. Yeah, yeah. Night vision on the reverse camera. So I've gotten out the car, walked the 10 metres, whatever it was, to this koala. And I'm very hesitantly going up to it because I know these things can go feral. If you've never been around koalas before, trust me, they look cute, but they can go feral on you pretty damn quick. And I've gone up to it. I'm starting to kind of like shoot, kind of like trying to like not touch it, like so I don't want it to claw me or anything. And it's not paying me any attention. It hasn't looked at me. It's still looking straight out into the bush. So I've got up to it and I've actually nudged it with my shoe. Gone up to it, nudged its ass with my shoe. It still has not reacted. It hasn't looked around or turned at me. It's still looking directly out into the bushes. So I'm like, okay, what's this guy looking at? I followed it where it's looking. I can see another koala about 2 metres off the side of the road in the bush looking the exact same direction. Okay, they're going staring off into the darkness. And this freaked the fuck out of me. That, yeah, I just got in the car and I think I told you, let's get the hell out of here. I didn't know what the hell was going on. It's koalas, they'll know, they're not dumb. They'll know you're there and they'll fucking, you know.
They're probably high off gum leaves.
Possibly.
I dare say they were.
So that's one of the more interesting, weird... That wasn't kind of was investigating. We were researching at the time. So we were doing something paranormal-ish. So yeah, so Linda, hopefully those answers from us were good. All right.
I don't know about that.
You don't know about that? Okay. This one comes from First Person Ghost Hunters. I didn't get the actual person's name who asked. And they ask, us as the host of the podcast, place debunking on our list of priorities when out investigating?
Well, you know what? I think that depends on your purpose for going out. If you're going out for experience and to have, you know, find out what are you going to feel during that investigate. Well, I wouldn't call it an investigation, but debunking right then, you'd only just do it in a bit of a logical way. You know, if you can rule something out, you do that because it's, you know, it's not going to help your experience to fool yourself. But if you're doing any type of investigation, I think you really have to put debunking up there right at the top of the list. Yeah. Because if you get them every little bit of information you get, you need to try and debunk it. Otherwise, there is no value.
Okay.
For me, I try and debunk everything. I do. And that's, you know, from, like I was saying earlier, 5 or 6, 7 years ago, where I believed everything was paranormal, it's the complete opposite now, where I pretty much try and debunk everything.
It's pretty much all just dust reflections and infrasound, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
that's what the koalas were stuck on, infrasound.
And it's at the point now where, and I guess it's, you know, you lose that, if you want to call it adrenaline rush, you lose that adrenaline rush where, you know, you hear a noise and you think it's paranormal, so your fear level's heightened and all that sort of thing. I don't go through that anymore, you know, and unfortunately, so if I'm sitting there and I say, look, can you knock on the wall? There could be banging on the fucking wall and I'll try and debunk it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably...
And it means any experience you have, whether it's for experience or investigation, has a lot more value.
Yeah.
If something happens and you can't explain it in any way, shape or form, you're going to get a lot more out of it than walking out of there fooling yourself.
Ash?
Can you have a debunking bias? So someone goes into a location, their bias is, yep, this place is haunted, so I'm going to prove it's haunted. Is there a debunking bias where this place isn't haunted, I'm going to prove it's not haunted? Not that you can prove something's not haunted, it's impossible. But can there be too much of a bias going to that way? Or should we all just be trying to bunk everything we can and just see what we're left with?
That's a really good question. I think that there can be a debunking bias. But you need to have the same principles in what you try to prove. If you're trying to prove something has happened, you need to take those same principles and apply it to proving that it was something natural. So if you can replicate that banging sound, then that's great. But if you try everything else, you know, it still might be something that is completely natural, but at least say to yourself, well, we can't replicate what it is, so don't make an assumption that therefore it has to be something natural only. So I think that's the only thing you can do. Apply the principles you apply to trying to prove paranormal, you can apply to debunking the paranormal.
Yeah. Absolutely. Myself, I don't really put a lot of stuff out there. None of us really put anything out there. So When it comes to debunking, it's a bit weird because I don't collect data so much. When I'm out investigating, if I'm filming something, it's not normally to film a paranormal event happening. It's normally to film what the other people are doing. If something happens, it happens. When it comes to my own experiences, I just let them be what they are. You know, I will think about, like, I'm not going to sit there and, you know, someone comes up behind me and starts knocking two rocks together. I'm not going to try to imagine that as being some form of communication from a ghost. Like, I'm not going to be, what's the word? Gullible or anything like that. But myself, I don't think too much about it, to be honest. I'm more just there in the time, like, see what happens.
Okay, well, to throw another question, if you were wanting to go out and just have an experience, is there anything wrong by throwing any debunking out so you can just enjoy the experience, real or not? Who's to say there's something wrong? So if you're not putting any information out there, it's just so you can go and enjoy it. Perhaps there's nothing wrong with allowing yourself to be.
I read a lot of fiction books. I read a lot of fantasy and stuff like that. And, you know, I know it's not true. It doesn't diminish an enjoyment out of that for me at all. I think it's a bit different with this paranormal stuff, though, because people get really freaking sensitive when you start questioning their own experiences. So
depends on what you put it out there as.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people, and this is starting to really annoy me on my groups, actually. A lot of people put up a photo. They won't say what the anomaly is in the photo. They'll just say, can you see anything? They're not actually telling you there's anything there. And I don't know whether they think there's something there, but I think they're just hoping people pick up on it. So then they've got their own piece of paranormal evidence.
And they can say, therefore, that it's also something that has not been influenced by themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But people can see anything and just about anything. So I think debunking's important, but like Brett and Spills have said, it depends why you're investigating or what you're doing in the first place. All right. Here's a question. This one from Michelle. We know Michelle. Okay, and Michelle asks, why do paranormal investigators have a title when any man and his dog can do what they do? I think I mentioned this question to you, and you said, well, why are car drivers called car drivers?
That's right. Or it's one of those things.
I guess,
why is the sun called the sun? Why is the moon called the moon?
Yeah. You know? Okay, why is a driver called a driver? Fair enough, but you don't identify yourself as a driver. You don't go up to someone and say, oh, my name's Ashley Hall, I'm a car driver. But you might go up to someone and say, my name's Ashley Hall, I investigate the paranormal. So is there a difference? So, you know, I don't know.
I guess it depends how you look at it, Ash. Now,
yeah.
If you saw it as a hobby or a profession, you would introduce yourself as that. I know when I introduce myself to people, I don't say I'm a paranormal investigator.
No.
But
you know, you look like a dick actually saying that, wouldn't you?
You know, and look, I'll say, you know, yeah, I have an interest in the paranormal, but you know, that's the extent of it. But I guess, like anything, it's a title that's been around for so long. Perhaps Michelle could come up with a new title, paranormal.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a good challenge. Just for those listening, when you comment on the show on what you think might be a better name or title for a paranormal investigator based on what you think it entails.
Love you, Michelle.
But you know what, to answer that question a little bit more, I think that that term paranormal investigator is used as a badge. A badge of honour. Mm. People go out there with a torch once, maybe with a K2 meter, with a semi-flat battery, and call themselves a paranormal investigator because they want to be seen in the same vein as their heroes on TV. So I think that that's one of the problems in the paranormal field or industry or whatever you want to call it, that a lot of people are in it for their ego rather than anything else.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that.
Okay. Good answers. From what you originally thought was a silly question, I've got another silly question. Now, this one's really fucking silly. This one came in when I originally asked a question. And this one is, what's your favourite position? Guess who asked that?
Me.
Yes, it was you. What the fuck? Why are you asking a question for your own show?
I don't know. So, therefore, is he directing that question at you, Ash?
Dog. What's my favourite? What is
was directed at you.
Well, my favourite position is host.
S.
Okay. Yeah, fuck you.
So you're prepared to host this thing?
Oh, God. Oh, no. Moving on. All right. Okay. Let's say that on May 7th, 2016, proof of life after death is found, presented and accepted by all. This is very hypothetical stuff. Ghosts are legit, hauntings are happening, and this is accepted as being fact. How do you think the world and its people will change?
Yeah. Look, I guess there would be... And I don't really want to touch on religion because I'm not a huge fan of it. So, but I think you would find a lot of religions pushing their agendas a lot more.
Okay.
That's my personal thoughts. I guess, you know, if there was that, if this was fact, look, it's a hard one to answer, really. Could go either way.
Well, the thing is, just proving that there is something doesn't still prove what exactly that is, what the context is, or anything about that. So the push from religion could be in either direction. It could be, hey, this is proof that you need to be following us to make sure you're part of that afterlife. But they could also turn around and say, this is the work of the devil or whoever.
I can see that happening.
So therefore you need to stay away from that and just follow what we are teaching.
Yeah. So regardless, we're still dicing with the devil and the religious view.
You know, I think it would be very similar to what happened with Galileo talking about the not having an Earth-centered universe and saying that the Earth orbits the sun. And he was taken aside and branded a heretic. And it was only 1992 that he was vindicated by the church, by the Pope. So that's how long it took for them to say, you know what, we kind of did wrong by this guy. So I wouldn't want to be the person putting that information out there.
Okay, well, what do you think? If proof does come, what... And this is a really hard question to answer. What format do you reckon that's going to come in?
I don't think that it... You know what? I think that there's maybe a problem with the definition of the question when we say what proof and proof of exactly what. I think we may get proof of there being something.
Okay, proof that when the body dies, the spirit continues. That's the only proof, though. They don't know where it's going. They know it can linger and that it does survive.
But what's the definition of spirit?
Whatever. Just layman's ghost.
So, what was the question again?
We'll tackle that question a whole other podcast.
We tackle the real issues right here.
Bam,
all right, next issue.
Ready. All right, what is your opinion on near-death experiences? This comes from Sherry H.
Okay.
I know you've got a good one here.
I actually had a near-death experience 2 years ago, and it wasn't... physically, I wasn't harmed at all. We had a vehicle lose control and drive through our house or through my son's bedroom. And what was quite interesting about the experience was that I was outside and heard a bit of commotion down the road, looked over the fence, saw a car coming towards our house and basically turned and started running. And as that was all happening, the car came through the fence and he probably missed me by only, 10, 20 centimetres. But as I turned back and looked and saw how close the car was to me, I can still see it really clear now where I can still see the leaves from the tree next to the fence there. I was up above the tree looking down. I could see myself running. I could see the car behind and the whole lot. But it was only for, a good, just almost a split second. And bang, I was back in my body. And it was almost like a rubber band. So if you can picture a rubber band being flung, it was just out of my body and then bang, straight back into it. And that's...
it's only like a third of a second.
Yeah, just... It was almost like...
Do you have that tool slowing down or anything? Like, did it seem like that time passed longer or any other stuff you hear about?
I wouldn't say passed longer. I can clearly see the leaves around me, around my waist, looking down, seeing myself running, the car coming. And look, I was unharmed. No one in my family was hurt. Nothing like that, but, and it was almost like I get the feeling, again, it's only a personal, because it's such a personal experience, I get the feeling that it was almost like my body preparing itself for death, just in case something did happen, so it was
So you call that a near-death experience because you think...
I wouldn't say out of body, that's probably a better term. I wouldn't say near death.
That's what, look, out of body, they are two different things, but I guess there are possibly similar processes taking place here. Yeah, that's interesting. And when you first told me that, like, it's weird because I know that, like, you and Brett, and I know you're no nonsense. When you start hearing stories which sound really out there, and I know you're not going to make that up, I completely trust you guys. It really blows my mind. It possibly blows the mind of people listening because they've heard the first show and we sound really skeptical, really down to earth. But we are this, but we're still having experiences.
Look, again, you know, I'm not saying it was a spiritual experience or anything like that. But that's, to me, that's what happened, you know, and I can clearly see, and even now, and this was 2 years ago, I can still clearly see myself running, and again, it was only a split second. It wasn't like a lengthy 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. Yeah. It was just like a click of the fingers in and out, and that was...
Okay. You, Brett?
Now, you know, I think that sometimes there's something to it. I certainly think, as you've said, you know, knowing spills, I think there's some very, you know, interesting experience you've had there. I think for a lot of cases, though, it's a load of bullshit.
Oh.
And the reason being, if you look at a lot of the reported near-death experiences people have on the operating table, they always tend to be in the, or generally tend to be in the context of their religion. So if you have a Christian belief, people start seeing the light, start going towards God. They might see Jesus. They see something that's congruent with their belief system. Yeah. And if you look at those experiences across different religions, they too have visions congruent with their beliefs.
Yeah.
So you could look at that as meaning that they are going through some chemical processes that are preparing them for death and taking them into a dreamlike state whereby...
DMT.
Yeah, you know what, maybe. But it's helping prepare them by giving them what they want to see, you know, giving them their version of what's going to give them comfort in those last few moments. So I think a lot of the time that's what it is. And the other thing is...
all psychological, you think?
Not always. I think a lot of the time that is.
Yep.
You know, there's certainly... there are cases out there where people are perhaps seeing a scene down the street that is later verified. That's a lot harder to explain. Mm. But I think part of the issue here as well is that we don't know when death actually occurs. We don't. We 100 years ago, you don't have a pulse. You're dead. Right now, people that are, you know, that are declared dead, 100 years from now, they'll be being revived. And there's actually a term called information theoretical death, which is the point that no current or future technology will ever be able to revive you. And I think that that's the only true understanding of death that we will probably ever have. So anything that leads up to that point, people technically are not dead, we just don't have the ability to save them. So if people are having some of these experiences where they say, oh, I was dead for 5 minutes and I was up there with family, I think that they were going through some chemical processes that gave them a dreamlike state. In saying that, I think that there is a bit more to it, but I think that's a great topic for another
podcast in the future. A whole podcast, because I know there's a lot you want to bring in on that subject, definitely. And a couple of people potentially to interview. So an out-of-body experience. So you've never had anything yourself, out-of-body experience? Or I know she asked about near-death experiences, but we'll throw it, because I've never died. Don't know if you've died. You've never died.
You know, I have had, I think, 2 or 3 out-of-body experiences over the years. I spent a fair bit of time reading about them, learning about them, trying to have one. Never had any luck whatsoever when it was, you know, when I've been consciously willing to do that. But there have been a number of times when, you know what, may have been a dream, but I remember walking in my bedroom, looking around and thinking, why the hell am I over there sleeping in the bed? And in the moment that I've had that realization, I've been snapped back into my body and woken up immediately. So, you know, to me, they didn't feel like a dream. Doesn't mean that they weren't, but they certainly were. You know, they fit the description of what people say is an out of body experience.
Okay. So too, I've had an out of, well, I haven't. I thought I was having an out of body experience once, but I really wasn't. It's a stupid story. Do I tell it anyway?
You have to now.
All right. So when I was about 20, I used to smoke a lot of marijuana. And I used to have sessions. So, you know, a group of friends would come over. We would smoke a lot of stuff up at my house where I was living at the time. And yeah, I was laying on my bed. My eyes were closed. The TV was on. My eyes were closed. And then I'm listening to this just kind of mellowing out. And all of a sudden, I could see the fucking TV, what was happening on the TV. And I'm like, I said, whoa, what the hell's going on here? I thought my consciousness was sitting about a foot in front of my fucking,
that's great.
My head. That's when I thought about it real hard and thought, I've opened my eyes, but forgot I had done so. So I've had anything. So yeah, so that's the closest I've come. Unfortunately, I've never really had anything that's put me into kind of giving me that jolt or that shock to put me. I've never had anything like that. So I'm kind of envious of you guys. So I'd love to see myself from the outside. Just so into me. Alright, one final question. This one comes from Deanna, and I really like this question actually. It's a little bit of a long one, so bear with me. Why do paranormal investigators tend to describe spirits as negative, evil, malevolent, or benevolent? When in real life we don't refer to humans that way unless we have reason to. In my opinion, spirits are but humans without a vessel, correct? Do paranormal investigators see them as something else altogether, or am I the only one that feels that way? Or is it because we have no other way to describe them because we can't see them to give a visual description? I've always been curious about this.
Great question.
I think it's a fantastic question. And the short answer to that, Deanna, is that, you know what, you're wrong.
It's infrasound.
It's infrasound. And koalas, yeah. I think that... part of the problem here, I keep saying part of the problem tonight, but you know what, people tend to assume that a spirit is going to be the entirety of the consciousness of the person who is deceased, where I tend to think that if there is a spirit energy, for lack of better words, they're going to be portions of their personality that were strongest. So that could be, you know, a positive thing, could be a negative thing. But also traditional hauntings tend to happen when there's been some traumatic death or something traumatic that's happened, some type of tragedy. So if you look at it in that context, I think you're more likely to find that haunting activity is going to have much more of a negative connotation, because there will be perhaps negative energy that has remained after the person has died, and they may have been a very negative person, angry person during their life, or it could be because of the context of their death and the tragedy that happened. So I think that that is why a lot of hauntings tend to be assumed as being negative, but it doesn't mean that they would all fit in that mould.
That's a good answer. What have you got for us, Bills?
I tend to agree with Brett, but I tend to not agree with Brett, and the way I see it is, you know, if it is a spirit, a dead person, you know, and Brett touched on it a bit last podcast where, you know, it's not the person as a whole, it's a part of their consciousness. So when it's that part of their consciousness, do they have the ability to openly communicate as we do now? So by talking, by hand gestures, by... you know, body language, etc., etc. Now, I'm going to make the assumption that no, they don't. So, if that's the case, perhaps the only way they can communicate is by means of what we perceive as negative.
Yeah.
When in fact, it could be just a form of them or a way of them trying to communicate. So that's my thoughts on it, anyway.
Yeah, for me, I agree with both of Spills and Brett. That's for people that are really having a negative experience and are correctly labelling their experience as being negative. I think for the rest, though, just makes for a much better fucking story. I think if you can stick the word bloody demon in the you know, title of your video, it's going to get a lot more bloody hits. I think, you know, people have an experience. And you say, I was in this house and a ghost touched me. You know, it's interesting. I was in this old hospital and this demon scratched me. Sounds way better. Your friend's going to ask you a lot more freaking stories. So I just reckon that a lot of times it's just people just laying it because it just sounds in quotes, cooler.
But you know what? There's something else for it that we can talk about in the future here that Spills touched on as well. We may perceive some of those communications as being negative when we don't know what's behind it. Exactly. The nicest of people, you walk into their house and if you're not wanted, they're going to tell you, get out.
Yeah.
They might swear at you. They might call you names. So if you look at it from that perspective, there seem to be a lot of audio recordings or that people capture all around the world that say things like, get out. Why is that one of the most common things?
I mean, you think about it too, right? Like, yeah, we're governed by laws and we're governed by our own morals and that sort of thing. I know when I'm going to die, I'm going to be a fucking arsehole. If I die and I'm a ghost, I am going to be a fucking arsehole.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen? It's going to backfire on him, and the part of his personality that will survive is just the arsehole.
that's the brown orb. That's still gone again. just his brown chakra survived.
Hey. I can smell it now.
It's true, though. You know, as living people, we're governed by laws and our own morals. So, you know, and the majority of us are good people. But you take all them away and you know you're not going to get in trouble and those sorts of things, which, you know, unless there's universal law.
Yeah.
But you're going to be an arsehole. You're going to create shit, aren't you? I know I would. Well, I'd create a habit.
You know what? What I want to know is if we looked into, in particular, Buddhist stories of the paranormal or people that, you know, Buddhist monks in particular are known for being, you know, very peaceful and developing a state of mind that is not attached to a lot of the things that cause us grief and psychological stress. So I wonder if there is a decreased level of paranormal activity from monks because of that. Because if it is, then it starts pointing.
They say there's nothing to shed of their emotions.
Yeah, there's not going to be any.
They've stripped it all back. All the ego's gone.
And so maybe that what they then on dying they would that energy will dissipate and become whatever it does afterwards, instead of having an aspect of that stays around of anger or anything like that. But I'd love for us to also touch on why are there so many recordings of get out, leave now.
I mean, we've captured get outs and leave nows. And
sometimes they're from paranormal sources.
Okay. I think we might save that question for the next podcast. I think, is there anything you guys want to say before we finish up? Anything maybe you want to pose to the listeners that they can comment on or...
I guess just keep your questions coming. Keeps it going. It's really generates discussion. And
you know, I want to know what the listeners think about negative audio recordings, negative EVPs that they've received. How do they interpret that? Do they interpret it as something angry at them and for what reason? I'd love to know what people's opinions are.
Okay, excellent. I'd love to, I reckon if you want to comment on this podcast, just to tell us anytime you've been told to get out on an investigation and where and what that was, we might even touch on that. And if you guys have got EVPs yourself of those words or anything, any other kind of being told to leave from a location, that'd be awesome too to send them in. If you ever want to comment, you can either just comment on the podcast itself or you can just find The Paranormal Guide on Facebook, and it's pretty easy. It's facebook.com/theparanormalguide, and just inbox the page there. Otherwise, you can email ashley.hall@theparanormalguide or one word, .net. It's not a .com yet. I don't know why I've got a .net email. It sucks. But anyway, until next time, which let's hope it's not too far away from now. I'm really enjoying getting into these podcasts. And yes, keep seeing those questions. I think the questions really made this actual episode.
They did,
definitely.
So until next time,
au revoir.
Au revoir.
Ciao.
Bye. See?